Yes, it's Pet Chat, and I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Earle this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Great to have you. No Cheryl today. I think she's on school holiday duties.
Excellent. That's all right. Hopefully we get lots of calls.
We shall. Now, what are you wanting to talk about today?
Well, hopefully we get lots of calls. But yeah, listen, this week the ticks have exploded, so hopefully we can have a bit of a chat about that, make sure everybody's up to date with the ins and the outs of tick prevention and maybe even doing tick searches on your dogs and cats.
So right.
People are probably sick and tired of hearing about ticks already, but like it seems like this year the tick season has been a little bit slow to get started. Usually we sort of talk about the first week of September, and we were all really expecting that, and then didn't really come, certainly not in my clinic anyway. We didn't really see many, maybe one or two in September. And then this week, oh my goodness, it's like exploded. And it's really taken a little bit of the warm weather, I think, to have the ticks, you know, sort of become really active. Ticks are always worse in a wet season. So because we've had, you know, quite a lot of rain really through autumn and winter, and now we're getting some warm weather, the ticks are due to be really bad this year. And so just a reminder to make sure that we're really, really up to date with our, you know, flea and tick prevention. The new medications are fantastic. They're really good. They fall down only where people forget to give them or there's a problem with the dosing. So they're underdosing, they're splitting doses. None of these new medications are designed to have split doses. They don't guarantee if they're the tablets, they don't guarantee an even distribution of medication throughout the tablet. So please, please, please don't buy a dose that's good for a 40 kilo dog, break it in half and give it to your 20 kilo dogs each, you know, a half, because one dog could be getting the whole dose, which will still be safe for that dog, and that dog will be protected, but the other dog may be underdosed. So that's really, really dangerous to do. You know, just making sure timing. Like most of the monthly ones are usually good for 28 days. Some of them have a 34-day registration, but we really want to be giving them like at that time. And it doesn't always work to give them on the first of the month. If they've only got a 28-day registration, 2 days actually can make a big difference. I admitted a dog yesterday who was due on the 1st of October. Owners were away at the dog was in boarding, and they've come home on the 6th of October, thought he was a little bit quiet. He presented to us yesterday, which was the 7th, and he's got two ticks on him, and he's in hospital now.
Wow.
So timing is really, really critical. It doesn't take very long for these medications to wear off once the timing is over. And then there's still nothing as quite as good as, you know, doing a tick search on your dog or your cat, particularly if you're, you know, a little bit concerned about them, if you're, you know, they're a little bit quieter than usual or they're a little bit wobbly, anything like that. Their voice has changed. So when we talk about doing a tick search, particularly if you've got a hairy dog, we want to be starting right at the front of the dog, the nose, mouth, face, eyes. 80% of ticks that are found on the front half to third of the body. So start at the front. And we talk about this little finger walking technique where you literally put your fingers on and you just walk them in little micro steps, feeling through this fur all the way down to the skin. And you're looking for any little scabs, any little bumps, any little irregularities. And you really need to cover the whole dog. But areas to be particularly concerned about are things like in the ear flaps, in around the base of the ears. Dogs often will get mats of fur around the base of the ears, and the ticks can hide in there quite easily. Lip folds. If you have a dog with saggy lips, we will find them in the lip folds, sometimes just on the inside of the mouth, in the underneath. So lift up the lips, have a feel through the dog's gums if they'll let you, if you can get your hands into their mouth. Around the eyes, and particularly for dogs that have a bit of a shaggy face where they have lots of fur or they have that little bit of, you know, sleep that accumulates in the corner, ticks love that area. And you'd be surprised how many times we get a tick that comes into hospital, and we even get our nurses to tick search them, and it's like a tick is found at the corner of the eye the third time that a vet nurse has looked them over, right? Like it's sometimes they're hard to find sometimes, so you want to do a really thorough job. Armpits are the other ones, and in between the toes and the feet. So, and just a warning for cat owners, just because you have an indoor-only cat does not mean they're safe from ticks. Ticks are very mobile. They do take a little bit of a time to attach, and we've had two cats last year who were strictly indoor-only cats. They never go outside, not even to peruse the backyard, and both of those cats came down with paralysis ticks, and those ticks have either come in on their owners or on maybe another pet, a dog, or, you know, little lizards, those sorts of things that can have them. So, yep, so be really careful, and we would definitely recommend having your pets treated all year round.
Where are ticks normally found? Is it like in the grassy areas?
In the grass, in the trees. So they've actually done a study where they've shown ticks love to go up high, and they literally can be like jumping and traveling in the wind, right? So they've done a study where they showed, starting from the ground, they have watched a tick will climb up a pole. So if you think about like a broomstick, they took a broomstick, and the tick will climb up 27 lengths of the broomstick. So they've just like flipped it over and over, 27 lengths to get up high. And they basically go high up into some of the bush and the trees and the scrub, and they will let themselves go into the wind. And they literally are traveling in on the wind. So sounds ridiculous, but that's what they do. Oh, so
you learn something new every day, don't you?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so ticks, very important.
Very important.
Make sure you check your animals. Now we've got Chris from Butterbar on the line. Hi, Chris, how can we help you?
Hey there. We're just about to adopt a tripod dog. So she's missing her right front leg.
Yep.
He's 10 months old, or going on 10 months old, a cavoodle.
Yeah.
And we're just wondering how best to support her.
Oh, great. Okay. So, listen, we always say in the industry that dogs are three-legged animals with a spare. And so your little one obviously has lost her spare, but they do really, really well. So a few things to just be mindful of is that dogs do bear about 75% of their weight on their front leg. So her front leg will be doing, a good amount of the work. But she's young, and so hopefully she's, you know, relatively fit and active. Really, really critical that we don't let her get overweight. She needs to stay in fit, lean body condition her whole life. So we want to be watching that really, really closely. You said she's a cavoodle?
She's a cavoodle.
Cavoodle, yeah. So hopefully she's relatively straight in the legs. You know, some of these little dogs like pugs and some of the poodle-y things, even the Maltese, that have really wavy legs, you know, where they have a bit of leg deformities. Yeah, bow-legged. That can be quite hard on the joints. Like, I mean, it's still, she'll be doing a bit of extra work, but if her legs are relatively straight, she'll cope with that really, really well. Keeping her feet groomed, you know, making sure that her nails are trimmed and that the fur growing between her pads doesn't get too long so she's not going to slip, because she'll always need to do a bit of a hop. So we want to make sure that that is, you know, sort of good. And then just giving her lots of extra time to learn new environments and things like that. But, I mean, they do, you know, as a young dog, they cope really, really well most of the time. So when she starts to get older, you know, you're going to want to just be a bit mindful about old age changes, arthritis and things like that. And then just be actively working with your vet to make sure that she's, on the best sort of protocol in terms of trying to prevent and slow down progression of arthritis and things like that. But as a general rule, you will probably find that she's a pretty normal dog. She won't know. They don't think about the fact that they have a disability. They just get on with it and keep going. They don't know any better. So, yeah.
Looks like that's what this little girl's doing.
Yeah, that's great.
What about stairs and stuff? She doesn't know how to navigate stairs. She's just 6 weeks, apparently, post-op.
Yep.
She doesn't know how to navigate going downstairs.
Yeah, and going down, because that the majority of the body weight is on the front, it takes a little bit of time. But I suspect that if you just, like, give her time and opportunity, make it a positive experience for her, she will get there. I've seen lots of three-legged dogs go up and down without too much difficulty. So it'll just take her a little bit of time. If they're particularly steep stairs, maybe a little bit more difficult if she has to be really, really bum up. But even then, I've seen dogs where they start to take the stairs sort of at a bit of an angle, like they sort of put both sets of feet on the same stairs and then they hop down and then, you know, sort of go like that. So again, just trying to make it a really positive experience for her. Don't force her into it, but encourage her to do it. And she's a young dog, so chances are, she's probably still adjusting a little bit to the change in how her body dynamics have to work. But I suspect that it won't take that long for her to work it out.
Excellent. So there's no specific rehab moves or anything that we should be doing to strengthen the rest of her body to offset the disability?
Not really. Like, I think in a really young dog, it would be different if she was a 6 or 8 or 9-year-old dog. But as a young dog, she's probably going to be pretty lean and pretty fit, and everything's going to be, you know, pretty active anyway. So I think you don't really have to do too much. Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for your advice. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Chris. Good luck. It sounds like a fun new member of the family.
And
so
she looks amazing. We can't wait to get her tomorrow.
Excellent. Great.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye. We've just been having a look to see what day of the week it is. I mean, obviously it's a Wednesday.
It's Wednesday,
But every day there seems to be a special event, a special day. And
an awareness day and a celebration.
And today is Pet Obesity Awareness Day. So
yeah.
talk about that?
So I wasn't actually aware that it was Pet Obesity Awareness Day, but I think it's a great initiative because a large number of our pets are obese, and that is dogs, that's cats, that's birds. We see a lot of fat birds, even rabbits, guinea pigs, those sorts of things. So what are we looking for if we, you know, trying to determine is our pet obese or is our pet overweight? The easy things to do is to have a look at your pet, and particularly for dogs. So we want to always be able to, if we're looking at our dogs sideways, so you're down at their level, you're looking at them sideways, and you want to say to yourself, is the dog's chest lower than the dog's abdomen, right? So we should be looking at a dog that has a nice little tuck up into the groin. The chest should be lower than the abdomen. If you're looking at them from down, looking down onto them from up above, we want to be able to see a bit of an hourglass between their ribs, and then their waist goes a bit narrow, and then their hips comes wide again. So we should see that hourglass. And if we get our hands on them and feel them, if we run our hands along the sides of their chest, we should be able to feel the ribs. If all you can feel is just like smooth or some little rolls of fat or skin, you can't feel the individual bumps of the individual ribs. There's a big layer of padding on that. And if you run your hand from the base of the neck down towards the tail across the top of the dog, we should be able to feel the individual bumps of the spine, the processes of the spine. We don't want to see them sticking out. That would be a skinny dog, but we absolutely want to be able to feel each individual bump. That would put your dog in a good sort of fit, lean body condition. Okay. With cats can be a little bit tricky, but some of those rules still apply. Cats tend to develop up a lot of extra sort of loose, flabby skin. And sometimes even cats who aren't fat will get sort of a saggy pooch. Usually what happens is that they get fat, that's where they get the saggy pooch, and then they sort of lose the weight and they have this saggy, flappy skin hanging on their belly. But again, if you, the rib trick, rib and spine, if you run your hands along the sides of the body, you should be able to feel the individual bones of the spine. You should be able to feel the individual processes of the spine. Sorry, around the side, you're feeling the ribs, and on the top, you're feeling the spine. You won't probably see as much of a tuck up into the groin if they're a long-haired cat, but if they're a short-haired cat, you should be able to see that. And we don't want to have like a large sort of amount of like belly fat in these guys. So if you can, you know, if you can put your hands on either side of the cat's belly and sort of swing it side to side, that's probably a bit, you know, overweight. Average cats will weigh about 5 kilos. That's pretty average. So smaller ones can be, you know, 3, 3.5 kilos if they're quite small and lean. Some of the Oriental breeds can be really lean. And some of the bigger cats, we will see some of our Maine Coon cats and some of those bigger ones, they can be a lean body condition and still be 7 kilos. But if your vet has weighed in your cat as 7 kilos and it's just the old standard like Moggy house cat, it's probably a pretty overweight cat. So
cut back on the treats.
Cut back, yeah. And so with dogs, getting weight off of dogs is almost always about portion control, calories going in. We need to reduce those calories going in. Cats, I mean, exercise is important too for dogs, but it's really 90% of it is about portion control. You will not get weight off of your dog just by increasing their walks from once a day to twice a day. Cats, we do portion control with cats. One of the things we do is we try to swap out some of the dry food for more wet food because cats are a little bit different in how they will eat and metabolize their food, but also wet food is predominantly water. So they're getting a nice full tummy. They feel like they're getting a good meal, but then it metabolizes down to a much lower calorie load. So that can be really helpful, taking away some of the dry, adding a bit more wet. But with cats, we do find that increasing their exercise level is really beneficial for cats. So encouraging them to play, get a, you know, a toy on a stick, that sort of thing, making them move around. So their portion of dry food, rather than feeding it in a bowl, stick a few little, you know, maybe half teaspoon piles of food around the house on elevated surfaces where the cats have to jump up to get to them, where they have to seek them out and find them. Cats are stealth hunters. They want to do that, and that will actually make them happier and they'll be more settled cats. So cats' exercise is really critical, but dogs is almost always about portion control.
Okay, good advice. I think I'll go home and check my cat. I feel like she might be a little bit pudgy.
Yeah.
So cut back on those dry treats. Now, Jane from Cardiff, we've got you on the line. How can we help you?
Hi. Look, I have a small Shih Tzu dog. She's about 7.5 kilo. She has been in the past on Cytopoint from the vet for her allergies.
Yep.
She's scratching now madly.
Yep.
And rather than have to go back to the vet, I was wondering, well, I know some vets on the internet say that you can give Cytopoint as an alternative, which is much cheaper. I was wondering if I could give her a Coles brand one, which is a hay fever allergy relief type tablet or a lozenger. Could I swap over from Zyrtec to this other hay fever allergy relief tablet?
So you're talking about using an antihistamine tablet? Is that what you're talking?
Yes.
You're saying using an antihistamine? Yeah. Listen, you can try antihistamines for dogs. We do use antihistamines in dogs. And for some dogs, they will help. But dogs don't have the same sort of density of histamine receptors in the body as humans do. And so antihistamines are much more unpredictable in dogs. They're not going to be as effective. They're certainly not likely to be as effective as your Cytopoint. That works in quite a different mechanism. And it's really quite an excellent product. But we absolutely do use antihistamines in dogs. The important thing is that you're just using a product that is just a straight antihistamine. But, you know, active ingredients are, you know, in a lot of the generic brands will be the same as what they are in Zyrtec brand. I think Zyrtec is, it's not cetirizine, cetirizine.
I'm looking at the website now and it is cetirizine.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we use loratadine, which is one of the brand names of that is Claritin. We use cetirizine. We use fexofenadine. And you certainly can, you know, do that. A Shih Tzu dog, you're probably looking at a, you know, obviously a small sort of tablet size. Can't remember what size Zyrtec comes in, but you're unlikely to cause any problem, but it may not really help, you know. And we do find that for some dogs, you need to swap between different antihistamines and try them. The other thing is that you may need to try them for a more prolonged period of time, 7 to 10 days of every day giving it before you can sort of say, actually, this really isn't helping my dog at all. Or before you sort of go, oh, actually, hang on, it's taken a week, but now I feel like she's starting to improve. The downside of doing that and not going back to your vet, Jane, is that if your dog has an infection, so dogs who have allergic skin disease are really, really prone to infections, in the skin because their immune system is so busy fighting off the things that it shouldn't be fighting off, right? It's reacting to allergies that are allergens that are in the air, that are in the environment. And then it's not then fighting off the normal things that every dog is fighting off. It's not, you know, keeping the numbers of bacteria and yeast and things at bay. And so the risk is that your dog could actually have an underlying infection, which is also going to be very, very itchy for the dog, but absolutely needs a different kind of treatment. And so the risk of not going back to the vet is that you can be hitting the dog with all sorts of antihistamines, but if we're not addressing an underlying infection, we're not going to see a result. And then you're going to get frustrated and your dog is going to be frustrated and things like that. So again, your vet will probably be able to give you some, you know, specific instructions for antihistamine dosing if you're looking for something like that. Cytopoint is a pretty cost prohibitive product for a lot of dogs. There are a few other things on the market it might be worthwhile talking to your vet about too that maybe are, depending on the size of your dog and how itchy they are, can be really effective. But yeah, I think we just need to make sure that allergic skin disease in dogs is often multifactorial and there's an underlying allergy, but a lot of times it's complicated with an infection on the top that we really need to make sure we're addressing.
Terrific. And is there a time span, like should I use it no more than, say, 2 weeks or a month or something? For the
antihistamines? No, not really. If you find one that works for your dog, you can keep them on it relatively indefinitely, as long as it's not upsetting their tummy and things like that. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much, love.
You're very welcome, Jane. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your call, Jane. Pet chat with Dr. Kimberly Earl, and we've got Joe from Dudley on the line. Hi, Joe. How can we help you?
Hello. Yeah, g'day, guys. Yeah, look, I'd just like to have a talk about chickens today.
Yeah.
So I've got, you know, I've got a few chickens, probably about, you know, eight or so, backyard chickens. Yeah, I noticed one of them the other day was, you know, sort of a bit under the weather, you know, not moving, really slow and sluggish and just sitting around. Basically, what my question is, you know, considering that they're chickens and, you know, they are my pets, and you know, I know some people really love their chickens. I mean, I love my chickens too. Sometimes I think it's a little bit over the top, you know, maybe taking them to a vet, because I use these just for eggs.
Yep.
Yeah, just trying to self-diagnose problems with chickens. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like I said, this one particular chicken I had, yeah, it's really sluggish and slow and not moving around. It's actually getting attacked by, you know, some of the other dominant ones within the flock. So I segregated it, and it, yeah, it just ended up, you know, and looked like it had some sort of infection, some sort of virus or some description, you know. So what I ended up doing was I made up a little concoction of water to feed it, which was consisted of just some human grade stuff like Nurofen, some, you know, human antibiotics, and I forget what else there was. You know, just some general sort of stuff I had in the cupboard there, just to try and, you know, try and pick it up a bit. You know, because, yeah, I was just wondering, you know, was that the right thing to do, or is it advisable to do things like that, or not? You know, just your opinion on that.
Sure, yeah, not really, Joe. In Australia, even if they're backyard chickens, chickens are classed as a food-producing species, and there are actually legal restrictions on some things that we can give to them, particularly antibiotics. We have some pretty strict regulations on what antibiotics, and there's actually banned substances in them. Not that there's anybody really policing them, but every time you're giving an antibiotic at a subtherapeutic dose to your chickens, you're actually exposing all the chickens to them, and then we do have a potential for an increased risk of a resistant, you know, infection, things like that. Chickens, Nurofen, I mean, we do have anti-inflammatories that we use in chickens, but Nurofen wouldn't be one of them. Certainly in dogs, Nurofen is highly toxic. I'm not certain for chickens because I've never tried to use Nurofen in chickens, but, you know, it wouldn't be something that we would recommend, particularly if you're planning to eat the eggs in the future. So we would always have a minimum 30-day egg withhold after a chicken has been given any kind of medication. And for some things, it's a lifelong, you know, you can't ever eat the egg again afterwards because there's there can be residues and things like that in them. So, yeah, it's not really something we would recommend. And I totally get your, you know, get your thing. We have two really distinct different kinds of chicken clients. We've got the chicken clients who have chickens because they love chickens as pets and they, you know, they love these birds. And a lot of times they've rescued them from, you know, their ex-battery hens and things like that. And they will go to the nth degree for the chickens. They don't really care if they're producing eggs or not. And then we have the other chicken sort of owner who is sort of like, I love chickens. They're great animals. As long as they're producing eggs and they're healthy, I'm happy to keep them going. But if they get sick, that's kind of the end of the line. And there's not a right or a wrong there. There's no judgment call about it. But we do always just want to be sort of thinking about, you know, it's a flock situation. So something that one bird gets can potentially go through the whole, you know, whole flock. And so we should be thinking sometimes it's worthwhile. You know, if you give it a few days and the bird picks up or doesn't pick up, then, you know, that's one thing or another. But it just keep in the back of your mind that there are lots of things that affect chickens that can go through the whole flock, and that can really affect their ability to produce healthy eggs down the track, as well as just being careful about what we're giving them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Okay. So, okay. Yeah, okay. Things, yeah. 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 So just keep them segregated if you find one with a problem, and that's it. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
All right.
No worries. Thanks for your help. Cheers.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome. Next on the line, we have Gregory from Rutherford. Hi, Gregory. How can we help you?
I have a Maltese Shih Tzu.
Yep.
Who is was about 13 and a half year old.
Mm-hmm.
About 4 weeks ago, she was diagnosed. She just wasn't the dog, you know.
Yeah.
And she was diagnosed with a cancer. Mm-hmm. I took her to the vet, and I said, I want to find out why she's not the same dog. He came back and said, well, look, you better get back here. She's got a chest cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he gave me Pred X, 20 milligrams.
Yep.
Oh, no, what does that do? Half a tablet a day.
Yeah. So Pred X is it's prednisolone, which is a corticosteroid, okay? So in the case of an animal that has cancer, and presumably when you say chest cancer, it's in her lungs somewhere? Is that right?
Well,
on the x-rays or?
No, he didn't say whether it was malignant or benign.
Okay.
you know, you could without doing further tests.
Right. Okay. So what we're usually doing with the corticosteroids is we're using it as an immune suppressant. Okay, because a lot of times that will give us a temporary but can be quite dramatic improvement in how the cancer is growing. Like it can actually suppress the cancer growth in the short term. It also tends to make the dogs feel a lot better. So steroids, when used in this sort of, it's really quite sort of like a palliative, you know, sort of measure. But they often will do things like reduce fevers, which cancers can cause fevers. They'll improve appetite. Like I said, they will often give a short-term improvement in the size. We will sometimes see regression and shrinkage of cancers in the short term. But cancers are a little bit like parasites and viruses, and they learn very quickly how to overcome you know, some of these medications. And so they will eventually they'll fight back and they'll overpower that and sort of grow back. But it's really, you know, it sounds like in your dog's case, your vet is trying to, you know, give her whatever time she has left. She's trying to give her as good a quality of life as possible.
Okay. All right. That's it. I'm wondering mm-hmm. whether to give her monthly NexGard, or would that be too overwhelming, the chemicals in that?
No, definitely give it. Definitely give it. Because the very last thing you need is for your dog to get a tick at the same time, that she won't survive that. So I would definitely give the NexGard in addition to the Pred.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. You're welcome. Much. Good luck, Greg.
All the best, all the best. This is your station 2 and URFM. This is Pet Chat, and we're looking at our pets of the week on our website. So if you head to 2nurfm.com.au and go to the lifestyle programs, you'll find our pets of the week for Pet Chat. And we're going to start with Sadie, the Australian cattle dog cross.
So little Sadie has come into care. It sounds like she's had a difficult start. She came into care when she was looking after a second litter of puppies, and she's quite a young sort of scared dog herself. So the puppies are all gone now. She has improved. She's gotten her health back. Says she is a bit of an anxious dog and has been known to have a little bit of separation anxiety. So they're really looking for somebody who's home a lot with her. She loves people. She bonds really strongly. She likes to do zoomies and chase a ball in the backyard. Walks really well on a leash, but at the moment she doesn't love walks. But, you know, she probably learned to do that. She's a young dog, so she'll probably learn to enjoy walks as she gets settled. It says that she needs a securely fenced yard. She would be suited for kids who are 5 years and over, not probably younger kids, but she isn't suitable for a home with cats. So if you're looking for a large to medium breed dog who, you know, you're home a lot and work from home maybe, that sort of thing, then Sadie might be the one for you.
Mm-hmm. And next we've got, now it's spelt differently. I thought it wasn't sure if it was sausage or sausage, but I think it's pronounced sausage.
So we've got sausage and lucky. So this is a pair of cats that have come into care separately, but they have bonded with each other. Sausage is 10 months old. Lucky is 15 months old. They've bonded really strongly with each other, so they are hoping to adopt them out together. These guys are playful. They're young, not super young kittens, but they're young and healthy. They're sweet boys who are affectionate with their chosen humans. One of them, Lucky, loves to play with a fishing toy, and Sausage is pretty highly food motivated. They can be shy with new people, and we do think that they would probably prefer a quieter home initially. These guys, it says, are not suitable with kids. So they might be good with other cats, it says, and potentially dogs, although they haven't really had a lot of interactions, but not great with kids. So if you're looking for a pair of nice young cats, we'd love to adopt these guys out together.
Sounds good. They're great. And if you want to have a look at them, 2nurfm.com.au is the place to go. And we will catch up with you next time, Dr. Kimberly Earle. Thank you so much.
Thank you. See you in a few weeks.
See you in a few weeks. This is Pet Chat, 2nurfm.